Go ahead and get your Bible open to Matthew chapter 2, and we'll get started on that story of the visitation of the wise men in just a moment. First, I remind you that I have been working off of some very old historical information, which says that Jesus was conceived in the ninth Jewish month. Therefore, he would have been born 9 months later in the second Jewish month. There is an ancient Egyptian Christian belief that he was actually born on the 25th day of that particular month, which means we're talking about the end of May in 7 BC. And we use the 7 BC because we know that there was a census taken by Augustus Caesar in 8 BC of all his official citizens, and that is probably followed up by a census of all of the people living in the Roman Empire within the following year, which takes us into the spring of 7 BC. So if all that is accurate, and I think it probably is, then Jesus would have turned 2 years of age in May of 5 BC. And he would have been exhibiting all of the things that we know of somebody just turning 2 years of age. So he would have had a small vocabulary. He would have been able to put small sentences together. He's definitely walking well. He's eating an awful lot of food on his own, not just simply being satisfied with his mother's milk. And he's running and playing and doing all of the things that we love seeing little two-year-olds do. And that is when this Matthew story occurs. Now, Mary and Joseph clearly intended to stay in Bethlehem after the birth of Jesus, because that's exactly where we find them 2 years later. And this is probably related to maybe some of the tension that happened in Nazareth in those months of Mary's pregnancy, where Mary and Joseph wed suddenly, and she is clearly pregnant within a couple of months after that. She's much more pregnant than just from the wedding night. And so all of this may have contributed to them choosing to go ahead and move to Bethlehem and live there after the birth of the baby. So that is why it says in Matthew chapter 2, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judah, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem." Now these wise men are not kings. That is a misunderstanding that's popped up over the years. These guys are the magi that at one time worked for Daniel. He was the head of the magi from his young age into his old age. And so these are the guys that are in charge of knowledge in the upper Middle East, up in Persia area, probably. And they have information gleaned from many, many, many documents and many, many oral traditions. And they also pay attention to the sky, because the sky is the place where signs and wonders can occur. Now, I believe that these particular wise men were skilled in the reading of the Jewish holy books. Because once they see something in the sky, they connect it to something going on in Jewish territory, in Jerusalem, related to the king of the Jews. And I believe that's because they were acquainted with two particular passages. One of them is Daniel chapter 9, that there is a countdown clock related to the rebuilding of the temple and the rebuilding of walls around Jerusalem. after the return from Babylonian exile. And that countdown clock will reveal at the end of it the Messiah. The other passage, I believe, is from Numbers chapter 24, where the prophet Balaam, who's a bad guy, he's actually a good prophet turned into bad because of greed, but God is controlling his mouth in this weird episode of Numbers 24. And he offers a prophecy that these wise men probably would have seen in their copies of the book of the Jewish holy books that Daniel would have made sure was in their library. And so this is what it says from Numbers 24, starting at verse number 15. We'll start with the oracle of Balaam, the son of Beor, the oracle of a man whose eyes is opened, the oracle of him who hears the words of God and knows the knowledge of the Most High, who sees the vision of the Almighty falling down with his eyes uncovered. So here he is saying that he's having this vision of God himself. And then listen to this next verse. I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. So he's seeing this important personage, but he's not seeing him in his time period. He's seeing him way out in the future. And then he says this, a star shall come up out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. Now, the star here is being played up against the scepter. Scepter is the kingly symbol. And so that makes the star a kingly symbol as well. And so this star is coming up out of Jacob, which is another name for Israel. So we have a kingly figure way out in the future that Balaam is seeing. And then it goes on and talks about him doing all sorts of military things on behalf of Jacob or behalf of Israel. And so this sounds very much like Messiah. And so that information is in the mindset of these magi living probably in what we call Iran today. And then they see something in the sky. And it triggers their belief that this is a fulfillment. And so they show up at Jerusalem saying, where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. So they saw his star in the east, that is, in their part of the world. And they've now come to the conclusion, after a period of time, that it meant that a king had been born at Jerusalem. And so they're asking, where is he? Where's this Messiah figure? Where's this new king of the Jews? Because we want to give him the gifts of worship that we brought. Now, verse 3 says, when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Now, we've been following the historical information about King Herod around this time period. And you know that he's already killed off two of his sons, the princes of the Hasmonean line, because he suspected that they were involved in a plot against him. He currently has another son, his oldest one, who's in his early 40s, in custody with an execution conviction against him for plotting against him. And he's waiting for permission from Augustus Caesar to carry out that execution. And so he is very suspicious of all sorts of claims against the throne, which would take him out, get him out of the way, give the throne to somebody else. Remember, his own baby brother and sister-in-law had believed, because of a Pharisaic prophecy, that their kids would become the next kings of the Jews, not Herod's kids. And so Herod is very paranoid about his kingdom right now. And so everybody in Jerusalem understands that too, because he's already executed people over it. And so everybody's upset. What in the world is he going to do now? Verse number 4, assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. So he understands that what the Magi are talking about is a messianic prophecy. Now, Herod is at the very least religiously superstitious. He may not be fully and formally a devoted Jewish person who's looking forward to the coming of the Messiah. But he certainly holds out the possibility that there might be supernatural signs pointing to the birth of somebody that could disrupt his intention as to who will reign after him. I think it's even possible he might have thought that perhaps a son of one of his other sons had been born, you know, on the quiet at some place in Judea. And maybe that's what triggered all of this. And if he didn't think they should be the next king, then he was going to take him out of the picture. So there also is the supernatural dimension going on here. Herod is a man open to the prompting of Satan, because he is not a devoted person to God, not completely. And so Satan, no doubt, knowing that the timing for the Messiah is coming to a close, when he hears that these guys are looking for the Messiah that's recently been born, Satan could have prompted Herod to take this next action. I think this is puppeteering going on here. So he assembles all these professionals in the word, asks them where the Messiah is supposed to be born. Verse 5, they told him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written in the prophet. And the quotation is from the prophet Micah, or Micah. It's chapter 5, verse number 2. Now, this may not have been as widely known a prophecy as other messianic prophecies, like the prophecies in Daniel, or the prophecies in Isaiah, or even the one in Genesis. Because Micah is not its own individual book. It's one of the 12. The last 12 books in our Old Testament were actually all part of one scroll for the Jewish people. It's called the Scroll of the 12. And so this would have been a somewhat obscure reference. So this is what it says. You, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. So that's all it says, just that brief reference. And so the at least some of the scribes, which would have been Pharisees, said that seems to indicate that the Messiah will be born at Bethlehem, which makes sense because that's where the first king of the Jews, king of Judaism, came from. David, the great king. And so it all seems to fall together. So Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. Now, I'm going to burst your bubble again. The Magi did not follow the star across the desert. They saw the star while they were back in the east, probably in Persia, probably in modern-day Iran, and that prompted them to study the scriptures and see the prophecies in the Jewish writings, which led them to make the trip to Jerusalem. So there was no star that they followed across the desert. Sorry. I still love singing We Three Kings. I just enjoy it for other reasons. But anyway, back to the text itself. He doesn't just simply ask them, to go to Bethlehem and look for this newborn Messiah. He says, so exactly when did you first see this star? Because what he's doing is he's calculating the possibilities of what that star might have indicated. Did it indicate the day of the Messiah's birth? Did it indicate the day of the Messiah's dedication or circumcision? Did it indicate perhaps something as far back as the day of the Messiah's conception? So he gets that exact date that they first saw this star and puts it in his calculating mind. And then he sent them to Bethlehem saying, go search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him. Now again, there was no star being seen in Jerusalem at this time. Not on the day that they arrived. And Bethlehem is a big enough city that he needed them to find exactly where this baby was located. I'm guessing that the population of Bethlehem may have been a couple of tens of thousands of people. And so there would have been a lot of kids, especially young boys, under the age of two or under the age of three in that city at this time. And so he wants them to do the heavy lifting so that he can then come in and kill the specific baby. And I believe Satan is all over this. His fingerprints are all over this whole thing. Now, verse number 9 says, after listening to the king, they went on their way. So they left the palace there at Jerusalem, and they head out, and guess what? Behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. So suddenly, there's the star again. Now, this helps us understand the characteristics of this star. There have been tons of people who have tried to calculate the Christmas star as being a certain comet. Halley's Comet was certainly around during this time frame. Others have thought that maybe it was a supernova that happened around this time, and there's been some suggestions for that. Others think that it might have been the coming together of several key planets in the sky in close proximity to one another to make some sort of supernatural sign. Got a big problem with that because that's not actually a star. That's actually several stars coming together from our perspective. So this tells us it wasn't an astronomical star, guaranteed, because this star moves ahead of the wise men from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, which is due south. No astronomical stars, whether they be actual stars or planets, do that. Plus, you will notice, it actually settles down over a particular house. No star ever settles down over an individual house. Not possible. Now, I will throw in this thing that I also mentioned when we were talking about the shepherds, when I said I don't think that the angels seen by the shepherds were seen by anyone else. I am not altogether convinced that everybody in Judea and Jerusalem got to see this star. I think this is a phenomena that is specifically limited to the wise men. Because if Herod's spies, which no doubt he sent to follow these guys, had seen this star settle over the house, they would have known exactly where the place was and would have been able to instantly report that to Herod, which they don't. So I suspect that only the wise men saw this star. And so it leads them, notice, to the house, not to the manger. Sorry, folks. I keep blowing your bubbles of Christmas pageants, but that's just the way it is. The shepherds came on the night of the birth, and the Magi are coming probably a couple of years later to the house that Mary and Joseph are living in Bethlehem with their toddler, Jesus. Now, verse 10, when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy because they know this is the sign again that will help them find the baby. And then going into the house, they saw the child, the toddler, the guy that's probably at least 2 years of age, with Mary, his mother. Now, Joseph is there too, but he's kind of to the side of the story. And they fell down and worshiped him. So they got down on their hands and knees and bowed before this little toddler. And then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And that's probably how the tradition of there being three of these guys got started, because there are three specific gifts. I don't know how many there actually were. If you take in consideration that the Hebrew language has a singular, a dual, and a plural, and that's what Matthew was originally writing in, then he probably used the plural, which meant that there was at least three or more. And how many more beyond that? Don't know. There are some traditions, I think, that have 12 of them showing up. But the tradition of there being three goes all the way back to, I believe, the 200s of the Christian era. So this is a long time story. They even have names for them going back about that far. You can think of this as being one of the original Christian fictions about Christmas that pops up. And so the treasures, though, these gifts are very important. And this is one of the reasons I love We Three Kings, is because it actually highlights the significance of these gifts. Gold is definitely what you would present to a newborn king. Frankincense is the offering that is given during prayer in the temple. And it's special occasions. And so it is also a very expensive gift to be given. And it is a gift associated with priesthood. And then myrrh. Myrrh is a fragrant ointment that is used in everyday hygiene. When Jewish people, Middle Eastern people, wash themselves every day, they would then turn around and anoint themselves with olive oil, but some of the more rich people would anoint themselves with scented myrrh to make themselves really smell good as well as look slicked up. But the other thing that myrrh got used for, besides making rich people smell good, was it also got used for funerals. It was used to cover up the smell of putrefaction when the corpse was being put into the tomb and left there. And so we have here gifts that are given to a king, to a priest, and to a man that would die. In fact, I have often said that if I ever got around to writing a novel about any of the things related to the story of Jesus, that this this container of myrrh that was given to him at this meeting will eventually be the one that Mary of Bethany anoints him with 6 days before he goes to the cross and to the tomb. But that's just the way that I would love to see it kind of played out and all the loose ends tied together. So verse 12 tells us, being warned in a dream not to return to Herod. So it was night when they arrive. So they settle down, go to sleep. They are immediately given this warning dream to get out of town. And so they leave within a matter of hours of arriving, and they depart to their own country by another way. So they don't stop back by Jerusalem. In fact, they might have gone around the south end of the Dead Sea and taken a different route back to probably Persia. But regardless, Herod doesn't see them again. Now, when they had departed, middle of the night, understand, the night that they arrived, middle of the night, when they had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. So here's Joseph given another dream shortly after these gifts have been given. Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him. And so he arose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt. And he remained there until the death of Herod. So instantly, God, after the gifts have been given, wakes everybody up and says, get out of Bethlehem. Wise men go one direction. Mary and Joseph and toddler Jesus take off the other direction, heading down to Egypt to disappear in the huge Jewish population that's down there. We'll mark our spot. We'll have this as our cliffhanger. Come back tomorrow into the Word.